Oilers. We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello everyone, you're listening to Battle Red Radio. I'm Matt Weston. Tonight I'm joined by the biggest, the fattest, the drunkest one of them all, our good pal BFD. How are you doing tonight, man?
Woo! Oh, I saw that should have been a longer woo if you're gonna take a drink.
Yeah, I
had to fill in the air.
5 second woo, yeah. It's February.
Hear the enthusiasm.
There we go. It's February. There's nothing to live for at all whatsoever. Except for the XFL, I guess, and going online, checking in every once in a while. One of the things I've tried to do this year is not like scroll through the internet, but just check something and then get off of it. And every time I checked this weekend, it was like stuff about the XFL. And so I'll make this finally clear. The XFL is dumb. It's bad. It's stupid. And if you're watching the XFL, you should find other things to do instead of watch football. You should probably go see a psychiatrist. You should go for a walk. You should read a book. You should shoot baskets. You should read the new baseball prospectus. You should go to the gym. You should go for a run. You should scratch your dog. There's a million other things that are better to do than watch substandard football after we just watched football for 7 months or whatever. So I have no interest at all in it personally. But the little bits I did see, I went out to eat on Saturday and they had on the television. I really think the XFL is just funded by sports clips and sports bars and barbecue restaurants so they can have something to play on a Saturday at 3 o'clock once football's over. And I got some glimpses of the Houston Roughnecks, and could you imagine Deshaun Watson and June Jones's offense, how good he'd be?
I mean, this erection would last at least like 2 months. I mean, seriously, it would be. June Jones knows what to do with football players. Just look what he did with Jim Kelly. I mean, the dude knows offenses. Oh, my gosh. That would be...
Yeah, just throw the ball vertically and have a fast quarterback.
Oh, hold on. I need a moment. Okay, I'm done. It didn't take very long.
Yeah, you're like Andy Samberg at the checkout aisle.
You kids and your references I don't get.
Yeah, this is a reference from like 2006 or so, I think. I think it was 6, but it's fine. So I watched glimpses of that, and I guess their quarterback from Temple is like 5'11". And I thought Connor Cook was supposed to be the quarterback, and I was kind of upset that we couldn't have time repeat, fold over itself and repeat, and see Connor Cook playing in Houston after losing a playoff game to them in that same city. And the last time he actually played a football game, then that was the only professional game he played, was in Reliance Stadium, I guess, at the time. And... Jadeveon Clowney pretty much won a playoff game by himself in that one.
Yep, and just think, that was Bill O'Brien's only playoff victory, was beating Connor Cook, the third strings, quarterback who never played, and he's never going to play another NFL game the rest of his career.
Yeah.
Winning.
Yeah, he did. Well, and then he beat Josh Allen, and we all know that was... that game was still so unbelievable. But the other thing too, it's looking at the Texans off season, and we'll do a season preview shortly enough. The off season is so long that I really wanted to savor and enjoy, I guess, just what happened. And I know like a lot of the other people who write about the Texans or fans of the team who read the things people about the Texans write, is that they go immediately from the season to Texans season review and what just happened to the Texans. And the playoffs are on. There's a lot of good football left to play. And so I was more interested in the Super Bowl, for example, and the preview of the conference championships and things like that than to get into the season preview then. So now we're doing it now instead. But so we'll get into a bunch of off-season stuff, probably as soon as next week. And the one thing that I want to talk about that may come up here pretty quickly is DJ Reader. And so Reader may be he's the only tag candidate for Houston, and that's something that we could possibly see before we even get a chance to make our way around over to start doing some off-season preview stuff. So, where do you land on Reader? Would you want to extend him? Would you want to tag him? Would you want to keep him around?
If I, in my perfect world, we would have never given Angela Blackson the contract we did last year.
Well, they can cut him,
they could cut him
and
at this point.
$4 million.
They're not.
I think they will.
You think they're going to cut Blackson?
Yeah, because they have the same thing in, like, Carlos Watkins, you know?
But they have the same thing. There's, like, 40 Jags that are Angelo Blackson.
Well, he is Special Teams Player of the Month. That is a good point. We're forgetting about that very valuable piece of information.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway, in my perfect world, yes, I would have already have tied him up for a long term. The thing is we have a lot of guys who need help on the defensive line. Whitney Mercilus can't win one-on-one battles. DJ Reader has a really hard time creating pass rush all by himself. If he can be double, I mean, it's hard to create an internal inside pass rush if you're being blocked by two guys, and that's what we were seeing with Reader off and on. But he also seemed to get tired as the season went on, where he was not as effective after the first couple of games. In a perfect world, I would sign him to a reasonable contract. I would not have signed Blackson, or I cut Blackson now and devote that money to him. But if you're going to give me the choice that I've got to either re-sign DJ Reader, or I need to, or I can go out and sign a Bud Dupree or a Ngakoue or a Shaq Barrett, you got to go with the edge guys. I think you have to, because we're so lacking on the edge. You kick JJ Watt back inside, and you let him do his thing there, and maybe go get some talent that can actually get to the pass rusher from the inside. But I think we have to get guys who have a proven track record of creating pressures against the quarterback. And that's just, honestly, it's not Reader, which is why I think we should go outside and spend that money elsewhere. And those guys are going to be expensive. They're going to be crazy.
Yeah, like Watt's due $15.5 million this year. And Ngakoue's going to probably make as much as that. He'll probably make 16 or 17. I think Dupree probably will. I think Armstead will. Like all the top, even Clowney, he's going to make as much as that. So that if you are signing one of those top pass rushers in this free agency class, you're going to have to pay around $16 million a year probably.
If they make it to free agency.
Yeah, that's a good point too. And yeah, I mean, I feel the same way with it. Like I would not pay Reader $10 million a year. I would cut Blacks and save up money. The Merciless re-signing really sucks, because that's $12 million this year and next year for a guy that can't create pass rush on his own at all whatsoever. The Reader thing, I wouldn't extend him just because he doesn't rush the passer. And also, he played a lot of 3-4 defensive end too. This saying that he played nose tackle predominantly all year isn't true. Whenever Watt went down, they put him at defensive end, they put Dunn in nose tackle, and their run defense fell from, you know, like being a top 10 1-2 and a below average one whenever Watt went out. And I really think, like, Reader showed pass rushing skill, but I think he just got tired having to defend the run so much. And I think it's the biggest reason for it. And so I think a different team with a better defensive line could probably untap some of the pass rushing stuff, because he showed, you know, glimpses of it. Like, he had 4 sacks pretty quickly, but it was just having consistent pressure. He didn't do anything really after the Chargers game on. You know, that was kind of the end of his pass rush. I think he had a sack in Salant too, but it was one of those kind of vulture sack varieties as well.
Clean up sacks, yeah.
Yeah, like one of those Tyler Fackrell sacks, you know.
Right. Or a Whitney Mercilus sack, really. Yeah. Zing. That's one, again, I get confused and addled in my old age. It's like, you know, you go out and you give Blackson $4 million a year, and you give Mercilus, what do you get, 12?
They're going to pay him $24 million for the next 2 years. And they can get out of it after those 2 years. But again, Mercilus is 31, and he already can't create passers on his own.
So you've given these two guys all that money when you could sign an Ngakoue. You could, with that money. I mean, it's just like, would you make that theoretical trade, Mercilus and Blackson for Ngakoue or Dupree or somebody like that? This is what makes it so stupid, that Mercilus signing. Like, if, again, it's going back to change the world. Blackson, again, we can do whatever. Mercilus, why? It's a stupid set of moves.
No,
sorry.
I agree. And the hard thing, the thing that makes the Mercilus sign, like, I think Mercilus would get that much on the open market, but it's just the opportunity cost getting Mercilus $12 million. It's that you could just, with the $4 million more, you get somebody like Armstead, Dupree, or Ngakoue, somebody can actually create pass rush on his own. And like edge rushers are like well-known, like edge defenders get, you know, somewhere between $10 and $12 million kind of easily. So that's why I think Mercilus would get something around there. I don't think it's like a bad market value contract, like they overpaid for him, but I think it was a bad decision for the need that this team had. It wasn't like they just needed to lock up Mercilus to keep something going. This was one of the 5 worst pass defenses in football last year. They're trying to improve this season, and extending Whitney Mercilus, doesn't do that at all whatsoever, you know? Like, it's just, like, the difference between him and Brent Scarlett really isn't that big at all at this point. The difference is that Merciless kind of, like, falls his way into making some big plays, you know? The ball bounced his way a lot last year. Fortuna spun her wheel towards him, I guess.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, how can I argue with that? Because it's, I mean, it's true. They're not. And the other big thing, and I've harped on this in the past, is he's hit the magic 30. He's hit the magic 30. He's on the downhill, and we give him a big contract. I don't think he would have gotten that on the open market because he's never shown that he's good enough to be a one-man show on to get to the quarterback. He's never shown that. I think we literally outbid ourselves for Whitney Mercilus for what he would have gotten. I don't think he would have gotten more than $6 or $7 million on the open market.
Yeah. Well, we disagree on that. I think the timing about that contract was weird, though, where it happened week 16 after the Texans never give contracts out during the season, and they re-signed Brian Anger. And Anger's contract didn't go through at first because the paperwork was wrong, and they go back and resubmit it. And then also Chris Olsen was fired, you know, immediately after the postseason too. And so maybe there's some sort of disagreement internally that, you know, Olsen's like, yeah, this is a bad idea if you pay Merciless this much. And maybe he was involved in team decisions at that point, but who knows? It's speculating. It was just kind of weird, the timing of it all. But that was then, and I guess this is still then. So for tonight's show, we're going to focus on some imaginary Houston Texans awards to celebrate the 2019 season. And we've done this show before in the past, and it's usually a fairly fun time. It's a shame Dollar Chris is so busy, you know, building houses or painting houses, I should say, you know, in his free time. So the first award I have here is if you can't say something nice. So what's the nicest thing you can say about Bill O'Brien in the 2019 season?
He was far more aggressive on fourth downs.
That's a good one.
And I really got to give mad props for that. He wasn't as aggressive as he needed to be, but still what we saw super conservative. There's only two spices, salt and pepper, in the spice rack, and pepper is way too spicy for me, conservative coaching the first 5 years. And so just to see even that little adjustment on fourth down was quite frankly, it was refreshing. It was my heart burst of joy. Look, if I'm an NFL head coach and I look at the numbers, I would almost never punt the ball. I would go for it on like 90% of fourth downs because the stats prove it out that it looks a lot better to do that. Yes, there are certain situations. If you're fourth and 18, punt. But if you're fourth and 3, go for it.
Yeah.
And so it was nice to see that he stepped up the aggressiveness. I would actually like to see how he was stacked up against the league on fourth downs and how aggressive he was for it, because that would be, I bet you got kind of to the middle of the road, because before that he was probably near dead last.
Yeah. Whenever I wrote the awards post conjoined together with this podcast we're doing right now, so I talked about the worst O'Brien decision, and I said it was the fourth and 1 field goal against Kansas City, made that game 24-0 instead of, you know, potentially 28-0. And one of the things that was really peculiar about that decision was that Houston led the league in fourth and 1 attempts. I believe they had 12, and they converted, you know, 67.5% of the time when they went for on fourth and 1. And for whatever reason, that situation, they punted or they kicked the field goal. And if you want to know the win probabilities, I have it here on a post-it note real fast. So before they kicked the field goal, their win probability was 93.6%. After they kicked the field goal and Harmon returned the ball that far, it dropped down to 84.8%, which is like a 9% difference. If they didn't get the fourth down conversion, their win probability would drop to 81.4%, which is a 3% difference in actually kicking the field goal and Kansas City getting the ball where they got it. But if they convert on fourth and 1, their win probability would have jumped up to 95.6%. And so it ended up being about like 11% swing from going for and potentially converting compared to actually doing the kickoff there at that point.
And how, you know, McCole Hardeman was like the most electrifying return man in the NFL this year. I mean, the guy is crazy quick, and we punted the ball we kicked the ball off willingly to him. It was just. I sometimes don't have the words with Bill O'Brien's strategy because it's just so perplexing. I feel like I think very logically. I deal with logic all day. I deal with computers. I need to solve this problem. I need to come up with a solution for this thing. And then I see Bill O'Brien has a head coach, and I think, oh my God, does he not just, can he not connect any dots? And that was just one of those times.
Yeah.
Yeah. My brain hurts.
So on fourth down, they had 13 fourth down conversions, which was tied third. Baltimore led the league with 17. This is all during the regular season. And they went for it 24 times on fourth down and punted it 57 times during the 2019 season.
That's much better. I like that. Yeah. Much better.
Baltimore had 21 fourth down attempts out 43, and then for not including field goals. But they converted, I guess, 17. They converted 17 out of their 21 attempts. And I can, let's say, but, so like they're the best team at like a per conversion rate in the NFL, except for whenever they play the Tennessee Titans, of course, because nothing they did made any sense this postseason. I'm proud of them. I'm proud of how absurd that random football is this year. So my answer to this one is I liked his offense a lot against Atlanta when it was really vertical and down the field. The only bad thing about Bill O'Brien is that when he finds something that works, he doesn't know how to tinker with it to keep expanding upon it or understanding it doesn't work anymore and try other things. And the problem with that game was that all their route combinations were just deep Yankee concept routes where it's just Hopkins and Fuller crossing, and they would have the safety make a decision and throw it to the other guy. And they just ran that play for the rest of the season, and teams caught on. And that was like max protect, two deep crossing routes just stopped working after a while. Also, I like the pass option offense against Kansas City, but then that offense stopped working after the second Indianapolis game where, yeah, it works when you play Oakland, it works when you play Jacksonville, teams with bad linebackers, but it failed to work anymore after that. And still, even against Buffalo, they were trying to run that play and had no success with it. So that's my nice thing to say about Bill O'Brien.
Oh, good. You're so sweet.
Yeah. So the next word we have here is the worst offseason decision. So I guess we can call this a Charlie Casserly, scratch it out. Rick Smith, scratch it out. Brian Gain, scratch it out. Bill O'Brien, worst offseason decision.
Are you throwing this one to me? Because yeah. That was my question for you.
I'm giving it to you now.
Oh, okay. Wow. The worst one, and I just don't want to pick on yours, but and it wasn't necessarily an off season. It was just a move that was made from the general manager position. And I think for me, it was with all the questionable things that they did, you know, Max Sharping in the second round, Titus Howard in the first, I think were all questionable. Lonnie Johnson to me was just such a ridiculously awful pick, but he's got skills. He's fine.
He may be
Glaspia. He was the worst cornerback in the NFL last year.
He has like the body to be good, but the reason why I didn't like the pick was that they needed cornerback talent right now. Like they needed somebody who could play this season, and Johnson wasn't that old whatsoever, as we learn, you know, time and time again.
And Greedy Williams was decent. Greedy Williams, I'm sorry, not Greedy. So, but
he tackled,
I think the
pretty
one
well
that
this
really,
year too.
He did.
Yeah, he was a pretty good tackler.
But the one that's really has stuck in my craw the most out of all these, aside from the Lonnie Johnson, if I wasn't trying to be original, I would probably go with Lonnie Johnson, is the third round pick for Gary Conley. Really sticks with me, like in an awful, terrible way. This is a guy who could not play with the Raiders, who's been terrible. And then, you know, Baltimore goes out and gives up a fifth round for Marcus Peters, and we give up a third round pick for Gary and freaking Conley. Ridiculous. Such an overpay.
Matt. Yeah. And I guess the reasoning behind that was, well, Conley's under contract for another year, I guess. And then who knows?
I don't care.
Yeah, I know.
I don't care.
And, like, who knows what sort of, like, front office wizardry the Baltimore is able to pull. Like, they always get the best out of every trade they make, and they always are able to really find the margins in the league, too. But, yeah, that's a good one. And also, like, I don't think Conley's very good. I think Conley is a better version of Cerise Wright, where next year he's going to get beat a lot. Because a lot of the plays that he made last season were chasing back and playing the football. He was beat a lot of times last season, and then also he got away with some, well, I thought were defensive pass interference penalties. Like Oakland game is a really great example. Some of the things they allowed him to get away with in that game were kind of wild. And then, you know, he was able to chase back and make plays on the ball, which is something all great cornerbacks do, but great cornerbacks don't find themselves in those situations time and time again.
I mean, at some point, the guy is just going to become Jacques Reeves, and he's going to be out of the league. Because that's who he reminds me of. He's got long speed. He doesn't know what he's doing in coverage. He's just, oh my God, he's terrible to watch.
Yeah. My worst offseason decision was signing Matt Khalil to start left tackle. And whenever they signed, I thought this was like a depth thing, like a competition thing. And then you see the contract, and the game's $7.5 million. And you don't give a guy $7.5 million unless you have this idea that he's going to start. And like, yeah, I'm very, very aware. I know if you're listening to this and you're very angry, I'm very aware that, yeah, there is a roster bonus assigned to that where they only pay him $2.5 million because they come before the season started. I know all about that. But still, that time, though, they gave him $7.5 million to be their starting left tackle. And that just set off just like such a nuclear detonation across the rest of the roster. One of the problems is in the draft class, I think Howard and Sharping were good. They're better than I imagined they were going to be. But Howard couldn't play left tackle. Sharping couldn't play right tackle. And if you go back and read everything I wrote about Sharping last year, it's like this guy can't play tackle. He doesn't have a slide for it. He's going to have to develop and learn how to play it. And they forced him to play guard as well. And so now you have Khalil at left tackle. We all know he can't play it. Then the season's about to start. And they even Bill O'Brien benched him in practice. So people couldn't watch him flail around there.
To hide him. I mean, what the hell? You're going to hide Matt Khalil sucking?
Yeah. Ow. Remember, and that was so funny last summer. It was like, yeah, Matt Khalil isn't practicing today. And nobody knows why. It's like, because it was a terrible decision. And they don't want you to see how dumb they were to make this decision. And then it leads to Bill O'Brien shopping Jadeveon Clowney after the franchise tag, after the deadline to be able to extend franchise tag players, which severely limited his market value, and it led to the Tunsil trade, which, again, the Tunsil trade's great because it didn't affect the 2019 Texans. It's going to affect the Texans next year and really affect them the year after whenever they start paying Deshaun Watson $35 million a year or whatever. But, yeah, the Khalil signing is the worst decision to me, not necessarily because it affected the team in 2019, but the ripple effects that created throughout the team from that point on.
And the thing about the Khalil signing, it just reminds me of the Merciless line. Who are we like bidding against?
Mm-hmm.
Like, were we actually like, oh yeah, Matt Khalil, look at this. Here's a real offer. And it's written in crayon. Yeah. He's going to get $6.5 million from the Browns. Yeah.
No, that's just, I mean, is that what we're
bidding against?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it seems to be because nobody else in the league was going to touch Khalil. Nobody was going to touch him for $7.5 million.
Well, and it's even like they signed Donald Penn. Like, I don't particularly like Donald Penn, but Donald Penn was like a slightly below average left tackle. And if you retire Julian Davenport, fine. Like, you ruined him by making him play right tackle in 2018, and you completely lost all confidence in him because of that. Fine, yeah, that's your decision. He played actually pretty well in Miami last year, but if there's other guys available to you and you went with Khalil because he had this pedigree of a first round pick and you haven't watched football in, you know, 4 years aside from your own players. But, yeah, that whole thing was, again, it didn't hurt the Texans in 19 in the fact that Khalil was horrendous or anything like that, but it set off this ripple effect throughout the roster. And I also kind of feel like if they don't sign Khalil, if they actually draft a left tackle, could start that spot or whatever, like, maybe Clown doesn't get traded at that point because they don't have to worry about fixing the left tackle position like the week before the season starts, you know?
Well, the whole Clowney trade deserves its own award of stupidity.
It can be the upper echelon of all stupidity. I mean, I think it's the worst move Houston made. And the thing about the Clowney trade is weird. It's like it didn't really destroy them this season until it did against Kansas City. But there were repeated games where it's like, yeah, it'd been really great to have Clowney here, but, you know, Watson made a bunch of plays and kind of saved it. But like a per-play basis, you know, the Texans' pass defense is awful, and it was horrendous, and it was one of the bottom five, and they had a bottom five pass rush and everything else. But they were able to, you know, get by big plays by their best players defensively, and also, like, you know, Watson and Hopkins and, you know, Fuller and he played just being, you know, amazing what they do as well, too. So I think next year is going to – I mean, I guess the biggest thing about this offseason, when they saw right about – for whenever I write numbers preview, it's that a review is that, like, this team has to get better this offseason. Like, this 2019 wasn't something to build on for 2020. This is a team that has a lot of holes and has a lot of things that has to improve on to, you know, fight off the the wild beasts of regression to the mean.
Oh yeah. And we're all, it seems like since 2013, it really seems like we've been on the right side of regression to the mean every season. That's what's been crazy.
Except for the Tom Savage season. That was the only one.
Well, yeah, but the Tom Savage season, if Tom Savage is a quarterback, that's you're just asking for it.
Well, yeah. And also like with Watson at quarterback, I think they were like 2-4 in one score games. Like they were a game below 500 after he tore his ACL in practice that week too. So like they were dealing with it that year, but I mean they have to get better this offseason. And then also I would record a podcast yesterday with Field Goals about the Clowney trade, like the extension with Seattle.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, so I recorded that. So whenever I get the link, I'm going to post on the website, but that's something you can listen to later this week. So what's your next award you have here?
So the next was the best. It was the Gary Kubiak, because he's been the best GM in Texans history. The Gary Kubiak best move of the offseason.
This was really hard. Like very difficult. I sat and I'm probably about to say that I'm probably missing something very important here. And I circled and I thought I was like, well, I mean, I guess it has to be either Tayshaun Gibson or Bradley Roby, you know, like, I guess that has to be it. And neither one was particularly great at all. Like Gibson just played center field and made sure the deep pass defense wasn't horrendous, which was very important for this team that they had a good deep pass defense because they had like the 31st ranked short pass defense. But I guess I'll have to say Roby, like he's fine. Like he's pretty good. He's definitely not a number one cornerback that you want to have on a really good pass defense, but he was, you know, passable in that role this season. And I don't think I would not want to live in a world where you're paying Bradley Roby $16 million a year to be your locked down number one cornerback. But I think for 1 year, $10 million, he was fine at it. I think the only problem the Texans made though with the Roby sign was that they should have made, you know, two more signings like that. And that was one of the things we talked about a lot last offseason, that, yeah, this Roby signing is good. They should make two more of them so they don't end up doing what they did this season, which was, you know, trade their own pick for Gary and Conley and sign Vernon Hargreaves and sign Philip Gaines and miss Philip Gaines whenever he got hurt even, the things that got that bad too.
So I'm going to go a bit differently with this because I just hated them so much. But I think not signing Tyrann Mathieu was the best move we made in the entire season. And I'm including the Tunsil trade in that. I still look, it's been 5 months, 6 months, whatever months since that trade. And I still don't know how to feel about the Tunsil trade because we gave up so much. Right. But not signing Tyrann Mathieu, that was the only decent thing that Brian Gain did. He was fine. Mathieu was in Kansas City this year. He was fine. He played very well at the end of the season. He was fine. He was torched throughout the Super Bowl game. That's more normal for him. And the fact that we did not tie ourselves around his axles really, I thought, was a great move. The other thing that goes along with this is that Gibson played kind of relatively even play with Mathieu throughout most of the season until he started slowing down at the end of the season when he was getting hurt, Gibson was. But it allowed Justin Reed, I think, to really flourish as a safety. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think not signing the Honey Badger was the best thing we did all year from that perspective.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, I think for what they all, I think what made that, I mean, I think Mathieu was really good in Kansas City, but I don't think he would have been used the same way in Houston. They paid him as much as that.
No.
Like, if you watched him, he played slot corner, he played robber, he played free safety, he played backside run defender, he played, you know, like the he played the match defender and zone match coverages and man match coverages too. Like, he did everything for Kansas City. In Houston, he played slot corner, he covered tight ends, and he played free safety. And, like, that's not Mathieu's skill set at all. And so I think it was a great decision for Houston just because it would have been he would have been worth the money that he got to do to not to be a lesser version of himself in Houston. I think they got what they got out of Gibson is comparable to what they would have gotten Mathieu out of the same role. And I like Justin Reed being, you know, in his second year, being the guy that's more versatile, that does a little bit of everything, than paying a guy $16 million to do the same thing.
Right. Yep.
So what's your unfulfilled desire? And this is a move you wanted Houston to make that they didn't make that would have helped them tremendously in 2019. Because I think one of the things that happens in the offseason is we get really married to an idea, or I know this happens to me every year. Like, you really want them to do one thing or a few things, be like, this would be perfect for this team, and they don't do it, and then it sucks. You kind of, like, are bumped out about it. And then you wait, like, you know, 7 months later, like, yeah. Or you wait 3 years later in the case of Sancho Henderson being bad.
Right? I think ours might be pretty similar. I think it's not saying an interior pass rush guy like Sheldon Richardson or Muhammad Wilkerson or somebody like that who could come in, who could have come in and made a difference in the middle of the line. That non-move for guys who were out there and available who could have done it killed me.
Yeah, I had the same one as well, too. And there's also so many of them also. You know, Sue was really good last year. Richardson was pretty good. Richardson was really good before Myles Garrett almost murdered Mason Rudolph. And Rudolph deserved it. I mean, I can't believe Rudolph was absolutely awful that game when he was doing. And then you also have, I mean, even like Malik Jackson, even though he didn't play at all last year, like Malik Jackson for $10 million, you would have been a fine contract, even though he only played, I think, a half of a game. And I mean, anybody would have really helped out this team. And I guess Wilkerson got hurt after three games last year, and he had five total tackles before he got hurt after three games. So, and he didn't even play last season. I don't even know what he's up to anymore.
Yeah, but even like a guy like Justin Houston would have been good, especially for what the Colts signed him for.
Yeah.
Get guys who can get to the quarterback on a 1 or 2 year deal. You're not killing your cap space at that point in time, but you're doing the most important thing you have to do defensively, which is get to the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And there were probably a good 10 guys out there we could have signed, and we sat on our hands and did nothing.
Yeah, no, and also, like, what did the Chiefs just do? They had the 29th ranked run defense this year by DVOA and yards per attempt. And they fixed their run defense just by putting nine guys in the box on rundowns. Like, that's what, and like that 49ers game, their yards per attempt allowed numbers are all messed up because they allowed five runs greater than 10 yards, but they held them to like nine unsuccessful runs that game and forced Garoppolo into second and nine and third and long in those situations. And then they have a great pass defense, and that's more important. And the best way to stop the run is just by putting a lot of players there, you know? It allows you to be more versatile if you don't have to do that. But yeah, the pass defense is more important than the run defense.
Yep.
I know. Watching Kansas City just really made me angry because I was watching them. I was like, it's really just interesting, like, the parallels between what they did and what Houston's been doing and the way they went all in and built around their franchise quarterback. And even like the failures, Reed Havis Smith, and how he learned from it and adjusted pretty quickly to build his team around Mahomes and actually put him in the place that they kept failing to get at compared to like Houston. And like you watch Kansas City's offense and how many different things they do to create open throws for Mahomes. You watch Houston's offense, and it's entirely different. And it's like I've watched Mahomes, and you know he's a better quarterback than Watson is. Like he sees the game in a better way. He has a better arm. His release is better, those sort of things. But it's not like he's 10% better than Watson, you know? He's like 5% better. And so I was just really annoying watching Kansas City and be like, yeah, this is how you do it. And they didn't able to win a Super Bowl because of it. Houston's, you know, they're like the Apes before they got the club in Space Odyssey. Before they learned how to use a bone, it hits mine in the head, you know.
Well, the difference to me is Andy Reid. Andy Reid's not you know max protecting with two guys in routes.
Yeah,
and so Reid puts Mahomes in a position to succeed, whereas Bill O'Brien does not with Watson on many many downs. So you allow the guy to ad lib, you allow him to move around. You can take the arm strength differences. Nobody's going to have Mahomes' arm strength. But I think Watson's got better ball placement, and I think that he can do just as many things Mahomes can on the run. But he doesn't have the targets downfield. If he's only got two guys downfield, who's he going to throw to? Mm-hmm. Or he's got Daniel Fells out in the flat who's going to get a two-yard, you know, reception. Look, Ryan Griffin was really horrible as a Texan for good reasons, just because that's the role he played in the Bill O'Brien offense. So you put these guys in better positions and they do better. And ultimately for me, that's the difference between Mahomes and Watson is the coaching.
Yeah, no, I think so too. Now even like their skill players too, it's like, I think Kelsey and Hopkins are comparable. I think Fuller and Hill are comparable, even though they play a lot differently, but just like speed-wise, they're fairly similar. Mm-hmm. I think you put Stills, saying he's like a better version of Robinson. Like the one thing they don't have is somebody who's like, you know, Mecole Hardman, but like even like a skill-wise, like there isn't enormous difference between a lot of things that they do. And even like Damian Williams and Duke Johnson isn't that big of a difference. The other thing that I think Kansas City did really well too is that when they ran the football, and like Kansas City doesn't have an elite offensive line either. Bosa destroyed Eric Fisher that entire game. Schwartz had a very good game against D4, but Ford, I think, was kind of injured and wasn't back to himself at all. But their interior had been bad too, but they can put anybody at the interior and have them be good. But whenever they ran the football, they run it against five-man boxes or six-man boxes, and they understand so well that you throw the ball to run the ball. You don't run to throw, you know? So, yeah, like, watching them was like, I don't know. I guess it was like erotica. Like, imagine...
Yeah.
Imagine right. Imagine Watson in this. And now whenever I watch football nowadays, they always in the back of my head, I'm like, oh yeah, imagine Deshaun Watson in this offense. Imagine what he'd do in this offense. Oh wow, imagine him doing that. And, you know, like they had moments this year where the offense was really great, but then, like I said earlier, they kind of like something works and they don't know how to expand upon or do anything differently, you know? And there's a lot of things out there available to them that they haven't even tried out yet.
No, that's been me. The whole football erotica Watson thing has been me for the past 3 years. I mean, you're still talking about Bill O'Brien, the guy who thought Tom Savage was, goodness to honest, the better starter than Deshaun Watson in the opening game in 2016?
I guess it was 17.
17, yeah. how you could have watched those two guys in the preseason and thought Tom Savage was better than Deshaun Watson is still, it's like, I can't calculate that. I cannot. It just, it's like I'm Data from Star Trek and this does not, I can't figure it out.
Yeah, we wasted way too much of our lives because of the circumstances involving this team. And I was laughing the other day because I read the preview I wrote in the 2017 season, and a lot of it was just like a film review of Tom Savage. I'm like, he's bad. And as long as he plays, right. He's going to be bad. And there was like so many comments like, well, he actually wasn't that bad at the end of 16, and he needs to have a chance, and just wait, and we'll see what happens. Like, he's bad. And just, we need to have Watson start now. And my biggest fear that 17 season was that it would take 4 weeks for O'Brien to understand it. And luckily, it took him a half. And, you know, Watson towards ACL didn't matter anyways. But it's just like a never-ending just series of just, like, every season's dumber than the previous season. But... the next question I have here is from me. It's called "See You in the XFL." So, which Texans starter is most likely to play in the XFL one day?
I did not watch any XFL games.
Well, I'm just saying, like, which Texans starter is on a team?
Oh,
level?
is most likely.
Yeah.
Oh, Carlos Hyde.
Okay.
Carlos Hyde. I think he's built for it. You know, everybody keeps talking about Hyde's great year, which is actually he had three great games. And
yeah, well, whenever you have 1,000, whenever you have 1,000 yards receiving, you had a great season, or 1,000 yards rushing, you have a great season.
Rushing,
yeah, that's all
right.
That matters for a running back.
Yeah, so that's what I see. He had moments. He looked quicker than he ever had. You know, he had his moments, but he was not great. He's not good. And I think that's where his logical end is with the XFL at this point.
All right. So Carlos Hyde, where he ranked in rushing DVOA, where do you have him at as your guess?
In rushing, he was near last, but he moved up. It was odd. He was 37th?
He was 26th.
26th.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know who was last? Peyton Barber.
Burnett?
No, Peyton Barber.
Oh, God, I should have known that. Of course. Yep. He's always like near the bottom, no matter what.
Yeah, I like Ronald Jones a lot more than him. Ronald Jones actually has some juice. But yeah, no, Fournette was down towards the bottom. Actually, Eckler was 35th. All of his value came in the receiving game.
Yeah.
And Le'Veon Bell, of course, was 44th. He was the guy who was down at the bottom for the majority of the year.
Yeah. I mean, Hyde was fine, but... If we sign him to like a $15 million guaranteed contract, you just know we're off the rails.
I mean, he is a Bill O'Brien guy. I mean, they'd be better off rolling with Duke Johnson and just drafting guy. Well, if she even drafts anybody, because running backs are so cheap, just find anybody. It doesn't really matter. I have DeAndre Carter. He's like the seventh best wide receiver on this team, probably. And after the punt, after the kickoff return fumble, like, he can't play in Houston ever again after that. Like, you know, Tyler Irvin had some success in Green Bay this year. Like, let him have a new beginning. But I think Carr's new beginning should be on, like, the Dallas Renegades or, you know, the Seattle Loch Ness Monsters or Sasquatches, whatever they're called, you know. So I my pick here is DeAndre Carter.
Yeah, because he went full Tyler Scissorhands on that return, and it was just right there. I mean, you just, oh my god.
Yeah.
Was I the only one who saw it coming a mile away? Like as he was running through and where he was holding the ball, was I the only one who saw that?
I blame the camera angle personally. Like when they did the sky cam, it was like the Blair Witchcraft. You're like something awful was about to happen. It was Paranormal Activity, and and the funniest thing too is like when Darwin Thompson catches it, he like I thought I was like, was he showing off after that? He was just so confused. I think he didn't even know if he could return that ball or not. Yeah. He was so confused, he didn't even know what to do. But yeah, I screamed though. I audibly screamed, and I couldn't believe it. And after that play happened, I was like, yeah, that's it. That's it.
I thought that he was confused and then trying to pick up a block at the same time. It's like, can I do this? But look, I got a blocker.
Oh, man. What a fun time. Now we have some viewer questions or listener questions. The first is from Huggy Bear. He asks, the Texans' chum player of the decade, and chum is Carlos Half the Middle. And so we can reserve this for any sort of like really inefficient play or any player who gets a bunch of touches who is very inefficient with the ball whenever he has it.
Well, I think anybody who, and I just want to double check because I think the number is 673, but I want to double check the number. It is 673. Alfred Blue. 673 carries as a Houston Texan playing for Bill O'Brien for 2,407 yards at 3.6 yards of carry.
Mm.
Nobody can out-chum Alfred Blue. He's like elite.
Yeah.
I can't believe I still remember the 673. That's how deeply that number has sunk into my brain balls.
I think that's a mental illness. Yeah, me making fun of people watching the XFL, I think we're actually the mentally ill ones. I'm trying to protect my own inadequacies on others, my own inadequacies on other people. Well, it's like what, you know, Carl Jung says, the things that you hate in other people probably say more about yourself, you know?
Right.
So I wanted to see some real fast. So he averaged 3.6 yards a carry
over his career.
Okay. So
with the Texans,
you know how many rushing attempts it would take for him to have the all-time rushing record at 3.6 yards a carry? It would take 5,098 rushing attempts. And so if we gave him, you know, 250 a season, it would take him 20 and a half years or 20.39 years to break Emmitt Smith's rushing record for Alfred Blue.
And that's
no injuries. And that's no injuries too.
Bill O'Brien would have been happy to continue to do that. It's striking to me. 5 years, 673 carries that he willingly gave Alfred Blue the football. I mean, how do you even? Holy crap! Don't even have the words.
Yeah,
I just anyway. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I think we really bring out the worst in each other. It's supposed to be a celebration, and we all, it always comes back to Alfred Blue.
That's it. I'm taking off my shirt and getting out the corn oil.
The next question we had here was from Uproot Texan 99, and that's at Uproot Texan 99, and he asked, how many draft picks will Bob give the Roughnecks for Sammy Coates?
I love that question because it's just so full of hate. It really is. I would say at least a third round pick.
Yeah, I think they would trade the comp pick they're about to get for losing Matthew. They didn't get comp pick for Kareem Jackson because Jackson sat out the last 3 weeks of the season with an injury. I think just stick it to Houston, too. He's like, yeah, I could play,
Probably. But
who cares? I don't need to at all. We're, you know, 5-10 right now. And I just murdered y'all for 60 minutes, you know, 3 weeks previously. But I think they would give up the comp pick for it. And then I think Bill O'Brien would be very flustered and confused that you cannot trade NFL draft picks for XFL picks. And XFL would be like, you can just sign him. Like, I'm sure he'll go there for free. You don't need to give us anything. And then he'd be very confused why they're driving such a hard bargain and then offer a 2023 second round pick is what would happen. So the next question we have here is from Carlos Flores, a friend of the show. He has the best Texans HEB commercial of the year. And there's the Naturals, the Ancient Rome commercial, and the sushi commercial. I take it you don't have cable in your household.
I don't pay attention to commercials, like, even a little bit. Sorry.
I've only seen the Rome one and the sushi one, and I guess I get the sushi one because that's the one where he throws the thing with the chopsticks and he catches it. I'm like, well, it was pretty cool. It's like, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's good stuff. But that'd be my pick for it. Did you read the name redacted thank piece that came out about how he's so happy and how he isn't happy at the same time?
No, I did not read that. I should.
Greg Bedard.
Just for the Schadenfreude.
Yeah, Greg Bedard wrote it. And it's funny because he's like, yeah, I live my life right now. I'm in business meetings. Just, he's pretty much just like an influencer for like corporate America, which is perfect for him. And he's like, yeah, but like I can still play. I'm still probably like the 19th, but I'm still probably like one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the league right now. But you know, the league has changed and nobody wants me at all. And it's fine. I'll just hang out here and be a family guy and golf and whatever. So I'm glad he's enjoying himself right now.
How is he one of the 19th best guys?
I think he said he's one of the 10th best quarterbacks. I'll have to go back and pull it up for you. But yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. You know, he's a river in Africa, huh?
Well, the one thing about him, though, if he was playing the Super Bowl, he would have been able to attack single high safety looks, unlike Jimmy Garoppolo. That was the one thing he could do. He could have done that.
That's the only thing he could do.
I still can't get over that watching the video of it. It's like Casey just played one single high deep and said, do something. I dare you, Jimmy. I dare you. And it's like, no, we'll just keep throwing slants and posts. And he had one chance and he missed them.
And all Brock could do was throw against single high safeties. He could throw those deep outs.
Yeah, that pass in the snow against New England, that was a very good, that was a god tier throw. So the next one I have here, well, I guess we can do some of the generic ones, and the first one I have here is special teams player of the year.
Oh God, I can't find his name. Where's my hook? Safety. Keon Crossan. Is that who I'm looking for?
That was a defensive back they traded a 6th-round pick for.
Yeah. God, dog it. He's played safety for us, and I cannot hook the name.
There's DeLeon Dye. There was Mike Adams. No. Are you talking about Mike Adams right now? He played 75 postseason snaps. Did you know Mike Adams played 75 postseason snaps for the Houston Texans?
Yes.
But it was Romeo Crennel's
fault. Because Gibson was hurt.
Yeah. It was Romeo Crennel, and he played – and Gibson played like 42 snaps against the Titans that week and got hurt.
Oh, I can't think of his name. That's how enthused I am. Our special teams are okay this year.
I would say Barcavius Mingo just because he made the block.
Oh, the block.
Yeah, I have to go Mingo. And whenever he made the block at the time, I was like, wait, was the Clowney trade worth it? Is O'Brien a genius? Is everything I know wrong? And then the Chiefs put up, you know, 41 straight points after that. Or no, they didn't put up 41. They outscored them 41-3 after that point.
God, I can't remember who it was. There was somebody who impressed me by always being down field, and I can't remember. I suck. Okay.
It's
I give
good.
Up.
So who's your defensive player of the year?
So I was going to wait. It's my turn.
Okay. Yeah. Go.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, it's kind of along those lines, but I thought it just might be fun to talk about it. Who is the best linebacker for the Texans in 2019?
The best linebacker? I would say Cunningham. Yeah. But Cunningham had an easier spot than McKinney did because he's the backside linebacker playing on the weak side formations. And he just run free and just run around guards and just splatter people. Like some of the hits he put on Derrick Henry were really gruesome where Henry's just like being completely blindsided by him, staying up in the box or looking for a hole, and Cunningham's running past like Nate Davis, and I just like seeing shockwaves through him, you know.
I really enjoyed watching both guys this year. I thought Cunningham was an edge above McKinney this year, but they're both really athletic guys, and McKinney brings that hugeness factor that he's just so like, he's like 6'5", and everybody around him looks like they're, you know, sitting in a sinkhole or something like that. But I really enjoyed watching those two guys this year.
Yeah. And it's been fun watching Cunningham go from being a bad tackle in Vanderbilt to a very good one. Mm-hmm. And like, he was good his rookie year too. Like Houston was able to correct that pretty quickly for him. The one thing that's weird about Cunningham is that he has all that speed and quickness, but he can't play man coverage against really great running backs at all.
Just no change of.
Yeah. It's just weird. Like what Kamara did to him. What the Raiders rookie running back did to him. I can't remember his name right now.
Jacobs.
But yeah, Jacobs did to him. Like, there's a few guys who really got him good in the open field, which is strange for considering what his skill set is too. I really like whenever McKinney's an edge rusher also.
Yes.
Like, that's so much fun. It's just like he has a bat with nails sticking out of it whenever he rushes the passer.
Yeah, that's fun.
So what was your favorite game of the 2019 season?
I thought there was only one answer to this, according to you. Like, I'm afraid that if I don't say the game, that you're going to get upset at me and storm out and cry.
No,
and it's going to be sad.
It's your life. It's your own it's your own phenomenological experience.
Beating the Patriots, man. There I just never thought it was going to happen in my lifetime.
I'm just so glad it happened last decade, you know? It's like they're 0-8 right. against this decade. I'm so tired of the 2010s. I hate it. I'm so done with it. Not that I hate it, but I'm ready for new experiences. And finally, the Texans gifted this one after the same thing all the time.
Yeah, it was just nice to see the difference. It was, you know, we won because Tom Brady had trash to throw to. We won because Bradley Roby made a great read. A lot of things had to fall into place for that game to happen. But I just never, especially going back to the Kubiak era, and, you know, I just never thought we were ever going to beat the Patriots. It was nice to just do it once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took him to be like 16th in offensive DVOA for it to happen. Other than the turning point of that game, though, is Duke Johnson scoring the touchdown after the Roby pick. Because they had plays like the Roby interception, but the difference in those previous years was that Matt Schaub would overthrow Andre Johnson on 3rd and 7 in the back of the end zone, or Will Fuller would drop the touchdown pass, or, you know, a variety of other reasons. You know, they would never actually capitalize on the opportunities that they had, and Watson and, you know, Duke Johnson were able to do it at that game. Do you have any other awards at all?
Well, I kind of skipped past yours, the best defensive player of the year, if you wanted to talk about that.
I picked J.J. Watt because he was the best defensive player. I know he only played half the season, but they went from a mediocre pass rush because of him entirely. Like, that game against the Colts, he was the only player to put any pressure on anybody, and it was really kind of fun, the chess match that Romeo Crennel played with the Colts offensive line, how they moved him from inside to outside, the stunts they used to get him one-versus-one rush opportunities. And I know that he only played half the season, that sort of thing, but I think the difference between him being on the field, him not being on the field, it was kind of like whenever you can make the argument in 2016 or in 2015, when maybe it was it was so long ago, when Peyton Manning had his vertebrae fused and the Colts went 2-14. You're like, yeah, I guess you could make Peyton Manning the MVP, and I wouldn't argue against it because look how bad this team is without him. And so it's kind of similar argument I'm making for the Texans on J.J. Watt. So Watt's my defensive player of the year.
Yeah, and I'm going to go somebody different just to be a little bit contrarian, and it's going to be Justin Reed, because I thought he brought so much. He was a true game changer against Tampa Bay. He's young and up and coming, and it's great. The Texans, throughout their entire livelihood, have always been straight trash at safety. We had Andre Howe for a while, who was fine. He's a great center fielder. And Kareem Jackson, when he was able to play safety, of course, was elite. But Justin Reed is, like, to me, he's like Ed Reed in his prime, and that's what he's going into. And I'm really excited to see him continue to develop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to say Reed, if you say McKinney, if you say Cunningham, I mean, if you even say Reeder, like, I'm not going to really argue against it. I understand where you're coming from for it. But, yeah, I mean, I think Reed would be my number two pick, or my 1B pick in this case. Speaking of Ed Reed, did you I guess Bleacher Report does this thing now where they play pool with the athletes, and the athletes tell funny stories or whatever. And Ed Reed was talking today about how, like, playing with the Texans felt like the old South, you know, and how coaches and stuff talk to players in certain ways. Like, they talk to y'all like this here. They let you do this. It's worth checking out, but I think it was big time revisionist history. It's like, yeah, Ed, you had a bad hip and you couldn't move and you were awful and you were terrible that entire season. And so I don't really understand what you're saying at all now, but it was one of the few times that ever, like, a player spoke out against playing for the Texans, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not going to value anything Ed Reed says. It was just a big grift.
Yeah.
He got his money. He doesn't care.
Yeah, that's how I felt too, listening to him. Like, this all just sounds like a guy who had an awful year whose career was over and is trying to make it sound better than it was.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm sure if you go on Twitter today, you can find it. So the offensive player of the year, who's your offensive player of the year?
I'm going with the Wizard. I'm going with Deshaun Watson. He is constantly put in situations that do not take advantage of his skill set. And yet he's still able to make plays like he did against the Bills. I'm almost 50. I've watched a ton of football in my life, and nobody gives me thrills quite the way that Deshaun Watson does. Mm-hmm. He is so much fun. Yes, there might be Patrick Mahomes. He might be better. But look, I'm rooting for Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I have Watson as offense player too, and I would make him the MVP as well. Would you agree with that statement? Is he your MVP, or would you pick Justin Reed over him?
Oh, no, he's the MVP. Look, the Texans, I honestly believe deep in my heart, the Texans are a 3-13 team without Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. Yeah, I have him at 6. But, like, if you put Tyrod Taylor at quarterback, or if you put, like, A.J. McCarron at quarterback, I think they win 6 maybe. I don't know. If Watt's healthy for 16 games, I think they could win 6. I don't know. But I see where you're coming from.
He's that big of a difference maker because he overcomes the Bill O'Brien game plan.
Yeah. Well, and one of the interesting things too about the season was that this was Houston going all in their offense, you know, training for Tunsil. They had all their skill players in place. They drafted all these offensive linemen. They were ready to score a bunch of points this year. And this was the first year they had a positive DVOA, and it was 0.3%. And they were, I think, 18th in points scored this year too. So hopefully some lessons were learned for next year. I don't know. And I guess really the only thing I could say, like, pro Houston for the reason for it is that the defense was bad. So they played a really ball control heavy offense just to make sure to limit how many possessions their defense faced. And if that was the reason for it, I can kind of sort of understand it. But the problem with that is that you miss out and you're not ready to, you know, score 49 points or as you need to score to be a team of the Kansas City Chiefs in the postseason. And it was really similar to what we saw, you know, 2018 against the Colts too. It's like, yeah, you can win 16-10 against the Broncos, but what are you going to do whenever you play, you know, the Colts in the playoffs or the Chiefs in the playoffs, you know?
You should always be on the gas at all times. Your goal should be not to outscore the team, but to blow the other team out and not give them a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't, we've talked about this multiple times, you can't go from just running the ball up the middle repeatedly and then scoring 49 points. That's not a thing that happens.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I guess the last thing I want to say about the 2019 season before we call the end of this one, is that I thought 2019, I thought Houston was going to go, I picked them to go 8-8 after the Tunsil trade, and I thought they were going to miss the postseason last year. And the reasoning for that, I think the biggest thing that I missed was how good Deshaun Watson is. Like, I have big blinders on how much of an impact he makes and how he can turn just about any sort of team into, like, a playoff sort of caliber team. Or, in this case, you know, win the AFC South and win a playoff game and end up where they always end up, which is the divisional round. And I do think this season was a lot more fun than I expected it to be. I think it was fun. It was a lot better than I ever imagined it was going to be back in August after the Clowney and Tunsil trades and everything else. I thought it was going to be disastrous, and it really wasn't. So it's really just a testament to how incredible, you know, Watson is.
100% agree. It's just, even with Bill O'Brien with his, you know, up the middle fascination, Deshaun Watson makes everything better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking also too, my AFC South preview, I picked the Jags to win the South, and, you know, they won 4 games or whatever. But I didn't foresee Jalen Ramsey not wanting to play there. Boye being hurt, Cameron Robinson being hurt, Andrew Norwell being completely awful and horrendous. I mean, one of the worst guards in football is Andrew Norwell. And every time he pulls, it's an affront to God. I didn't think Miles Jack would be one of the worst middle linebackers in the league, which was a thing that happened. I didn't think Yank and Ngakoue would start for us. I thought they were going to have a great pass defense for our way. I thought Foles was going to be pretty good in that, like, a quick passing horizontal offense. And he, of course, broke his collarbone and made one throw last season. So I was right about the Colts, and I was right about the Titans and the fact that they need to become really great at something, and it was their rushing attack, which ended up happening for them. But the Colts being bad last year was beautiful for me. Every time I hear the Colts, I just boo in my head. a San Miguel boo in the middle of a restaurant or anything else, you know?
Well, just look what happened the first, you know, the last week of the preseason and the first week of the regular season is Andrew Luck retired, Nick Foles dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who saw that coming? If you wrote your preview in, you know, before Andrew, especially before Andrew Luck retired, because that means in the division, the Texans now have gone, are going to go, instead of going, you know, 2-4 or 3-3, are going to go 5-1 kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think I wrote my Texans preview before the Luck injury, but I wrote my Colts preview after the Luck and after the Luck retirement. And I was like, yeah, the Colts are going to be, you know, very mediocre this year without him. And whenever I did the Colts podcast, the Colts guy I talked to was like, oh no, they're a 12-4 team with Luck at minimum. And they're a minimum 10-6 team with Brissett. I'm like, yeah, but they're not great at anything at all, you know? And the Colts have the most cap space this year, and they're going to have a ton of cap space and draft capital and everything else. And I think it's going to be fun whenever Philip Rivers goes there this offseason.
He's done. Dude is done.
I don't know. I don't know. I think he'd be better than Jacoby Brissett, though. With an offensive line, just sign like two receivers for him.
I think he's done. He and Drew Brees, I don't know. They're both fighting for the most done old quarterback right now.
Imagine Tom Brady. Imagine Bridgewater going to Indy and having him play him twice a year. Man, I may have to move.
Oh my gosh.
I think Brady's fine if he's in a good offense. He didn't have any skill players with him. Brees, he just can't throw the ball downfield at all, you know? And like even the Vikings, they aren't a good cover team at all. They can't play man coverage, and they just like, yeah, we'll double cover Michael Thomas and we're going to win this game. And they had to bring Taysom Hill in to make their sideline throw. Taysom Hill had to come and throw the ball downfield for him. It was embarrassing.
Brees is done. Brees is like beyond done at this point. I mean, the Saints, if they need to make a decision that, look, Brees is done and Bridgewater's the guy. Sign the guy.
Yeah. Do you see the Taysom Hill stuff? Well, actually, he's the guy.
He's the guy. Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Whatever. So that's our show for tonight. We'll be back on next week. I don't know if you want to do, maybe we'll do a rookie review. Maybe we'll do a Texans offseason preview next week. I'm kind of leaning towards doing an offseason preview next week, though. If you look at the cap hits, cut some players, twirl our mustaches.
Whatever.
Yeah.
This is all the fun I have in a week happens during this podcast, like literally. So let's do it.
Okay. Well, great. Well, I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Battle Red Radio. Thank you for being on tonight, BFD. We'll be back on later this week. We'll do a quarterback carousel podcast. And then next week we'll do something Texans related as well. And keep it going. So
those are my gang. I'm flashing my M gang sign.
Love it. And then also make sure to give the podcast 5 stars, review it, send to your friends, send to your family. Even if you don't have friends or family, send it to yourself and then you know, spam 5 stars and sort of thing too. But until next time, I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Albert Radio. Thank you for being on Sign BFD.
Woo!
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.